Hello, and welcome to the G&J Show. I'm Gerhard.
And I'm Jocelyn. As married couples, we all want strong marriages and healthy families. But what can we do to be that couple and family we've always dreamed to be?
Our show is dedicated to helping you improve your marriage, strengthen your family, and encourage you to live your best life.
We discuss practical resources and books and have conversations with other couples to find winning strategies and methods for your marriage and family.
Today, we're going to talk about The Temperament God Gave You by Art and Lorraine Bennett and how understanding your temperament can have a beneficial impact on your marriage as well as other relationships in your life. All right, let's dive in. Welcome to our show. And today we're going to be talking about the temperaments. This comes from the book, The Temperament God Gave You by Art and Lorraine Bennett. They are both psychologists in the United States, and they have written this book on the temperaments, which in a way it's kind of like understanding your personality. But the idea of temperament goes back to the ancient Greeks and has been continually developed over the centuries since, including by psychologists such as Carl Jung. So one of the key differences, I guess, I want to mention before we really dive into this on temperament is the distinction between temperament and personality. Mm-hmm. So temperament is nature, and by the definition under the book, personality is the nurture side of things. So temperament is the foundation to your personality and who you are that you have at birth before environment, parenting, any of that can kind of kick in and modify it, change it, or accelerate it. So that's the difference between temperament and personality. So, do you have anything you want to add before we start breaking out the four different temperaments?
I think it's a good thing to emphasize, like you're doing right from the start, that temperaments are tendencies. So when you kind of discover what your temperament is, you don't have to feel badly about it. It's just the way you are. And I think because they're tendencies, tendencies can be used for good or for bad. Basically, if your temperament, for example, is melancholic, which is the first one I'll get into, you have melancholic tendencies and they can be used in a great way. They can be used in a poor way. It's all up to you. So I think that's a helpful way of thinking about it. You're not like locked in a box. They're just, how do I say, it's like your body, you know, it's like your mind, you know, they're just tools.
Yeah. And I guess one last thing before we dive in. The temperaments can be split up into four quadrants. Mm-hmm. So on the upper half of the quadrant, you could say that those are the extroverted temperaments. And by extroversion, we mean if you're an extrovert, you're someone who is energized by being around people. That if you need to get an energy boost, you need to go and hang out with people. Introversion, by the definition that we're going to work under for the duration of this this episode, introversion is the opposite. Introversion is if you need an energy boost, you need to go spend time in solitude.
Right. So for example, like if you go to a party and you could just be there all night and your spouse has to drag you out the door at the end of the day or at the end of the night, you're probably an extrovert.
If you go, never has happened to me.
If you go to a party and then the next day you need to have some serious alone time, you're probably an introvert. So if you feel like you need to balance alone time with a social time, yeah, you're probably more on the introverted side of things. If you can just be with people all the time and not lose energy, not feel tired, then you're probably an extrovert.
Mm-hmm. And so that'd be one bisection of the quadrant. The other bisection on the other axis would be relationship focused versus principle focused. So relationship focused for both of them, I think it should be pretty self-explanatory, but basically similar to the introversion extroversion where if you need to get energized, you need to either spend time with people or away from people. The relationship focused versus the principle focused is you prioritize one over the other. Mm-hmm. You have a tendency to prioritize one over the other. So if you're people focused, you are someone who's a lot more comfortable bending the rules for the sake of a relationship or a friendship. Whereas if you are someone who is principle focused, you're more willing to strain a relationship for the sake of maintaining principles or ideals.
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it. Have you ever come across that yourself?
Yes. we'll get into that once we've gone through the different temperaments, and we tell you what temperaments we are. Yeah,
should I just jump in?
Go for it.
Okay, so first one we're going to look into is melancholic, and I've just taken these adjectives from the descriptions that Art and Lorraine Bennett wrote in The Temperament God Gave You. And so here is the melancholic in a few short words. Attention to detail, orderly, tidy, high standards, critical, worrywart, pessimistic, perfectionist, values truth, analytical, idealistic, cautious, motivated problem solver, judgmental, dwells on disappointments, complainer, low energy, introverted, stoic, and faith-oriented.
I guess one thing I just want to comment on that is, and don't think it was touched in the adjectives, but the melancholics are also typically very creative.
That's true.
Like they're also, there's an element of creativity to that. And that creativity comes out as a lot of musicians, poets, composers, artists will tend to be the melancholic temperament.
Yes.
And kind of along with that, what allows that to happen is
they go deep into the recesses of their soul.
there is that element.
There's a lot of depth to the melancholic.
Yes, there's a lot of depth. But the melancholic is also a slow starter. Mm-hmm. So if you present a new idea to melancholic, they're not going to bite right away. Mm-hmm. They're going to need to chew on it for a while before they like the idea. But once they like the idea, they'll run with it for a long time.
Yes, perseverance is another way of describing a melancholic. Yes. They will go until the end and then more.
The very, very end. Which is why a lot of composers, musicians, poets, like particularly the ones that have really built a career around it, are very likely going to be melancholic because there is that persevering aspect to it.
Whereas, yeah, over obstacles and things like that.
Yeah, you're going to push through. Whereas there's another temperament that we will get to next,
I think.
This temperament, as you'll see, doesn't necessarily have that ability to sustain for the long haul.
Right, but they're also known for their creative ability. Yes. So the sanguine is the next one that we'll look at. Mm-hmm. Do you want to give an example of a melancholic person that you know? You don't have to name them. You can just describe. Am I putting you on the spot? Okay, I'll give a description of a melancholic person. She is very ambitious. She's detail-oriented in a job. She prefers to be at a desk, not too much social interaction, so that after work she can have the energy to socialize with her friends. She's been in previous jobs before where she's been very social, but in the evening she finds that she's too tired to hang out with other people. So that's a description of a melancholic in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a melancholic in the workplace can also be someone who, like we said before, is very persevering and like has very, like very, very idealistic and high standards. Mm-hmm. Can also be someone who can be seen as very demanding because they have those high standards that are holding people to it. And a melancholic is not someone you will gravitate towards if you want to celebrate a success or a victory with. They're not naturally
a Yahoo kind of person.
Yeah, Yahoo or spontaneous celebrators.
They're always a little cautious. They're always like, but what if?
Yeah.
You know, and where's the problem?
There's someone who you'll come to and you'll say, hey, this was amazing. This is great. And then they'll congratulate you for a half second, but immediately follow it up with, but, and then talk about something within that same project that didn't quite go according to the way that they thought it should.
So a melancholic in a relationship, you can think of a melancholic as somebody who brings up the deep issues, who wants to connect on an intimate level, who has the house very tidy and organized. I know one melancholic who color codes her closet and alphabetizes her books. They enjoy order. They might even gravitate to jobs that are just organizing jobs. They can work pretty well independently, I find.
Yep.
But because they are more on the principle focused side of the spectrum, I think that's a pretty good description. Mm-hmm. So there's a there's the positive side of the tendencies and the negative side. I hope that we highlighted that.
Yeah, and every temperament has positive and negatives, except for mine.
Let's go into that one. So here's a sanguine. Here's some adjectives to describe the sanguine. Friendly, fun-loving, communicator, creative problem solver, respects freedom, careless spender, overloads their schedules, lighthearted, bites off more than they can chew, impulsive, distractible, flighty, scatterbrained, immature, superficial, cheerleader, optimistic, spontaneous, and adventurous.
No weaknesses.
Well, it depends on how you use them, the tendencies.
Yes, very true.
So let's make a disclosure. Gerhardt's a sanguine.
Yep. So I've taken the temperament test a number of times. Every time, without a doubt, I am a sanguine. I have the sanguine temperament as my number one, far and away.
How do you like being a sanguine, Gare?
It's fun.
That would be the kind of response.
Yeah, it's great. There are some weaknesses or some things that I've learned that I really need to be aware of. Being a sanguine, an extrovert and relationship focused, I always need to make sure that I'm in a work situation where I have a team around me, mm-hmm. that I can be a part of a team and part of a unit. I can do independent work and I can do it well, but I find it extremely draining and mm-hmm. extremely challenging. So to be in a position where I'm expected to work in isolation or independent of other people for prolonged periods of time really sucks my motivation and really sucks my my life and my energy. So that's one thing that I've learned over the time, just be aware of and try to continually put myself in positions where I'm in that team environment because I need it and I do well there. And I get my best results professionally mm-hmm. when I'm in that situation. Another thing that I think was mentioned on this list was uncontrollable spending habits or something.
Oh my
like
gosh,
that.
Uncontrollable. That's careless.
Careless spending habits. Little bit better. Yeah, I'm a shopper. I like to shop. I always like new gadgets. I am flighty, so my interests tend to bounce from mm-hmm. one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. That being said, I have somewhat settled down in terms of a few areas of interest that I kind of rotate through. but that's something as well, particularly in a marriage where, and we have kids, so finances are... We have to do more with less, and it can be a challenge at times to discipline myself and not buy the latest shiny toy, whatever, even if it may be good, even if it may be something that in and of itself there's nothing wrong with, constantly having to battle to say like, nope, 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 don't need to buy that.
One thing you do have working for you, though, is that you're relationship oriented. So if you kind of view it as putting your relationship first rather than not having a certain thing, then you can probably feel motivated.
Yeah. And I think an example of that is before getting married and before through high school, university, if I wasn't in a serious relationship, things like saving and like money, period. The sanguine, we live in the moment. Very much mm-hmm. so. And the future is abstract. It's like, I can't see it. It's not here in front of
me.
So
somebody who's future oriented, that's a principle.
Yeah.
Will ideal.
Diligently save and do all the right things for the future. Whereas as a sanguine, I don't function that way. And my secondary temperament is phlegmatic. So I'm really relationship
which
focused.
Which we'll get into.
Yep. But for me, what's really helped being in a relationship, being married and having kids and having relationships that depend on me is really, mm-hmm. I lean on that to help me do things. I don't lean on doing things because it's the right thing to do or doing things because it's the thing I should do does not really motivate me at all. Whereas if knowing that, hey, I have to put food on the table, I have to provide for my family, and relationships, those relationships depend on that, motivates me to actually go through that hard thing or push myself that extra mile. It's not the relation. It's not the ideal.
Absolutely. And I hear you say that all the time. And I think that also highlights so there's again, we talk about tendencies, but pushing and pulling in different directions, but you can kind of create a hierarchy of your tendencies. Like, so if you have a tendency to be relationship oriented, you can prioritize that over your tendency to be careless spender, which is, like, I think a great example. So I think what I'm trying to say is people shouldn't be discouraged to find out, like, oh my gosh, this is something that will always be the case for me. It's just a matter of recognizing it, accepting it, and working with it.
Yeah. And I mean, with all our temperaments, a lot of the attributes that come with our temperaments can be both positive or negative. It depends on your attitude. It depends on your attitude and how you want to orient it. So for me, I'm an extrovert and knowing I'm relationship focused, I try to put myself in positions or orient myself towards relationships in order to make up for my weaknesses.
I think that's really cool.
Cool. So I'd love to talk about me for the entire episode, but let's move on to the next one.
Well, it's a little bit more of you, phlegmatic.
Woo! More me. I'm awesome.
That's the sanguine coming through again. So phlegmatic is empathic, steady, calm, respectful, easygoing, cooperative, faithful, loyal, peaceful, at others' service, dedicated, distant, indifferent, passive, tendency to withdraw, introverted, patient, predictable, maybe slow to initiate intimacy, and a team player. So it starts off really nice. And then you start realizing kind of the underside. You're like, oh, that too. There's no perfect bundle.
No. And I think the one thing with the phlegmatic that really struck actually the both of us when you were reading the book, I don't think it's in that list, is the phlegmatic, they're super easygoing. And that's one aspect of the temperament that I have. I'm pretty chill, which is a great strength. But within the phlegmatic temperament is an iron will. Like, when they've decided they're going to do something, they do that
thing.
There's
no stopping them.
No. But I think until you actually get to know that phlegmatic person very well, because they're so easygoing and relationship oriented, like willing to sacrifice their own preferences or sometimes even comfort for the sake of the other person.
You might
see them as being soft and spongy and not actually having a spine. Whereas in reality is there's a really strong spine in there. They will pull it out when they need to. And when they do, it usually surprises everybody.
I think it's an example that Art and Lorraine Bennett give, but I think it's their son who's playing on a sports team, and he's playing on the sports team. He's really good, and the sports team is doing really well. And then one day they ask the son, like, yeah, like, don't you love swimming? And he's like, no, I hate it. And it just threw them by surprise. They're like, what do you mean? You've been doing this whole time. But because the phlegmatic is so relationship oriented, they will push through to please other people, to the detriment of their own pleasure, to their own needs. And on the positive side of that, like, speaking of the iron will, I think a phlegmatic in a relationship will be extremely loyal. And when I think of phlegmatics I know who are in relationships, they will go through anything to maintain the relationship, and relationships are definitely a priority. So even though they seem, like, on the one hand, like, really easygoing, really influenced by their relationships, once they've made a commitment, once they've decided to stick to something, like, you can depend on them.
They're in
very
it to win
dependable.
It.
Yeah. So I think, like, one thing that I learned about the phlegmatic, actually from rereading this book to prepare for this podcast, was just that phlegmatics wilt under nagging. So it seems like kind of like this catch-22, because, like, you're like, well, okay, this phlegmatic is kind of slow to move. Like, imagine somebody who is, like, they have to really look at the options. Not like looking at completely detail-oriented like the melancholic, but somebody who may be so slow to start that they never start. Or maybe, they just need somebody to just give them a little bit of a push. But for somebody who's not the phlegmatic, who's friends with them or a sibling or is a parent to phlegmatic, they might feel tempted to just tell the phlegmatic what to do, because that'll get the phlegmatic going sometimes.
The problem will get them.
Because they're relationship oriented. But the problem is that there's a possibility that the phlegmatic might be doing something they don't like and they won't tell you, because what's more important to them than the principle of liking something that you're doing is the fact that the relationship is okay. So I'm thinking of a phlegmatic that I know, something that was really helpful for her when she was deciding on a career was that the fact that her mother took her to the career center. That was the difficult step for the phlegmatic, is just to get out there and start actually thinking about it and take action. So just the 0 to 1, that's what she needed. And then when she got to the career center, she could go look through the book herself. She could choose her program. And maybe it took her a little bit of time, maybe like a little bit of encouragement, like you can do it, you can find it. But yeah, she just had to sit there and found something that she really liked and, you know, worked in that career. So I think that's, yeah, the idea of like, don't be tempted to like nag and say like, you have to do this, you have to do this, because the phlegmatic will close up. And then also like, don't just tell the phlegmatic what to do. Like those, I think, two really like, when I meet a phlegmatic, because I'm the opposite of phlegmatic, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, like act, like do something. Like it's just like, it's so unnerving sometimes. But I think I have to, like, I've come to respect the phlegmatics a lot, because they have a certain like inner peace. Like they move cautiously, carefully, and relationships are in place. And there's kind of like a harmony about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said. Now for the fourth and fiery temperament.
My own. So I'm a cross between a choleric and a melancholic, and choleric is my dominant personality. And well, here's the nitty gritty. Action-oriented, easily takes charge, independent, extroverted, loves overcoming obstacles, reacts quickly and intensely, eminently rational, hates wasting time, naturally judgmental, naturally unsympathetic, disregards instruction, prone to pride and anger, naturally prefers things over people, avoids moments of vulnerability, naturally egotistical. Beautiful. What do you think?
I was just going to ask you that. For the cleric. I mean, the cleric, every time I think of the cleric temperament, I think of the CEO. Like the cleric is your stereotyped CEO leader type A
person, mm-hmm. Like pusher
person, like super ambitious, driven, will work crazy hours in order to achieve their goals, will push through anything in order to achieve their goals, whether that's people, projects,
walls.
Yeah, like they will push through to get it done.
Here's an example of a cleric that we know. Sister visited one weekend, and he had in mind to do this canoe trip to go to a certain place. And when they arrived with their canoe and all their gear, they were told that the canoe trip would take them 4 days at least. And they said, no, we only have 2 days. He said, well, technically, it takes 4 days. Like, we're going to do it anyway in 2 days. Like,
and they did it in 2 days. And two and a half days, I think.
So that's just an example. It's like, that's the idea of disregarding instruction. It's just like, I want this to happen, so I'm going to make it happen the way I want it to happen.
Mm-hmm. And no one's stopping me.
So those are kind of the fun things about being a choleric. I like, just as a side note, like when we were preparing for this podcast, we were talking about the choleric, and I was like feeling a little ashamed of what a choleric looked like, because I mean, as Gary says, like a choleric, you think, oh, CEO, somebody who's running a business. And here I am, I'm at home with my boys. I don't have a career besides like taking care of my family. It's a very relationship oriented field that I'm finding myself in. I'm not naturally relationship oriented.
It has a very driven and ambitious temperament.
Driven, ambitious. So it's like, yeah. So like, you know, when I sit down with my kids and I play with them on the floor, I'm just kind of like, oh my goodness. Like there's Gary sitting on his laptop, like typing something away. And I'm like, I'm reading the same baby book over and over again. So sometimes I do find, I'm at odds with my natural tendencies in sort of the position that I'm finding myself in right now. And I want to be at home with my boys. I want to be a good wife. But I do find like being a choleric is at odds with being in a good relationship with people sometimes. Like you saw the descriptions, eminently rational, hates wasting time, naturally judgmental, naturally unsympathetic, disregards instruction, like independent. Anyway, so we're having this conversation. I'm thinking like, wow, like Gary, like this is terrible. You know, like I have a lot of things going against me. And I think we realized that I had been sort of repressing my choleric tendencies. And anyway, it all led to a really good thing. We talked about it, and I'm reflecting on it quite a lot. And I wrote a blog post called The Choleric Wife. If you're interested in reading more and seeing my journey marrying my choleric side to my chosen vocation in life as a wife and a mother,
what would be one of the insights that someone could expect to find on the blog post?
Well, I kind of give a quick description. I go through each of these points, and I really want to emphasize that these are tendencies, and they can be used in different ways. And so, for example, loves overcoming obstacles. Okay. So steamrolling people to get at places, is talking about knocking over walls. Yeah, definitely in the business world, this is a great thing. In the family, I can easily push over people's feelings, and part of me is just like, I just need to get to what I need to. So I think you can redirect that energy in a different way and think about, okay, so you're good at overcoming obstacles as a choleric person, as a wife and as a mother. You can be a great motivational coach to your husband and to your children. You can be a great support because you can show them that those obstacles that they're seeing in front of them in their life are something that they can overcome. It's not about diminishing the obstacle, because that's not fun for the choleric. It's about saying, hey, that's a big obstacle in front of you. Yeah, that's for sure. And you know what? You can get over it. And that's like super exciting for the choleric. And I think like we're really good at motivating other people, coaches, like not just life coaches, but team coaches, sports coaches, you know, so we can bring that energy into family. So that was kind of exciting for me to recognize that those tendencies that I thought I had to repress could actually be used in a really fruitful way in a marriage and a family.
Yeah, for sure. That's an overview of the four temperaments. Mm-hmm. We're running down on time. So I guess we'll end with one last question to each other.
Oh, okay. Surprise question.
Surprise question. I'm just thinking of it. What is one way that knowing your temperament and knowing of the temperaments has made an impact in your life?
Yeah, so knowing the temperaments, I probably read about it in high school. And when I read it, it was like this, like, wow, like eye-opening moment. Because then I realized, like, again, I'm a choleric. I was like, why aren't more people like me? Like, why don't these phlegmatics get it? Like, why don't they just make a decision? I realized like, okay, this is a tendency. Like people have ways of living that are different for me, and that's okay. And that was kind of like a maturing moment for me. So I'm really grateful to Lorraine Bennett for writing this book, because it helped me be more compassionate in my relationships. It helped me appreciate different qualities of people, and helped me realize kind of where the holes in my own personality were. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like learning the temperaments for me was like learning my colors. Like once you know them, you can see them anywhere. And it helped me with interpersonal relationships, like from friendships, colleagues, dating, marriage, kids, the whole shebang.
Yeah. And I'd say for myself that knowing the temperaments has really, both I've gone through a similar process that you have, Jocelyn. It's really helped me, because there's only four, like unlike the Myers-Briggs, which is 16 and is actually a derivative of the temperaments, it allows you to quickly make a fairly accurate assessment as to what that other person's temperament is. Let's say melancholic. Mm-hmm. So then if I know that, it gives me an idea of here's how I can speak in their language that mm-hmm. they will get what I'm saying.
Right. For example, like with melancholic, you'd be more cautious. You would explain to them the details. Yeah. You'd help them see through the process.
Work through the details. For a sanguine, what might feel like excruciating detail and have to keep going over everything and feel like a lot like handholding, because the capacity for risk is different between the two. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for me, the temperaments have been a huge help just in social situations and able to get a better bearing on people. And as a sanguine, someone who's extroverted, relationship focused, likes to make new friends, meet new people, and communicate. For me, I've really seen this as being like a cheat sheet on how to get ahead and how to, without having, how to get ahead and more effectively build relationships without having to make mistakes that in the past I would have had to learn the hard way sometimes in order to get to a certain destination. Whereas now it's a lot easier for me to bypass those pitfalls.
So I, speaking of cheat sheets, I wrote another blog post called Cheat Sheet for the Temperaments. I think that's the title anyway, where I talk about like the four temperaments, but specifically the most difficult aspect of each temperament and just kind of an idea of like how you can navigate that. So those comments and how do I say advice is based on my experience and Gary's experience, and we just kind of like made a succinct version of how to handle the most difficult aspect of each temperament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in the show notes to this episode, you will find links to the two blog posts we've mentioned. You also find a link to the book, The Temperament God Gave You by Art and Lorraine Bennett. If you don't have the book, if you haven't read the book, we highly encourage you. Please buy it.
You can also take a quiz online.
Yeah, you can also take a quiz online. I will have the link for that quiz there, just to give you a quick understanding in terms of which temperament you are. And then we strongly recommend you read the book to get a better understanding of how it goes. We will be doing some more episodes in the future around the temperaments and diving into like temperament in marriage, temperament in parenting, and maybe do a deep dive episode on each temperament to help all of you listeners here get a better understanding and to really use this tool as a real means to maximize and improve your marriage, your family, and your life.
Yeah, it's been a great help to us.
It's been a great help to us, and it's been a great help to a lot of couples we know. Anyway, thanks for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for this, our first episode on the four temperaments.
We hope that you've picked up some practical tips that can help you, your marriage, and your family. If you have any questions or comments for us, you can reach us at gandjshow.com.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, please rate and review us on the podcast app you're using to listen to us right now. This will help us to reach new audiences.
Once again, I'm Gerhard.
And I'm Jocelyn, and you're listening to the G&J Show.
Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.